fly.
We took an entire golf course. We had girls in bikinis laid out all over the greens. Snoop was there. Warren G was there. The who's who of the music business was all at this video shoot. With that, all hell breaks loose. Everything gets shut down.
Here it comes. You're listening to Smooth Era, a podcast about the legends of 90s R&B. Each episode, we'll dive deep into the stories about their lives, their struggles, and what it was like being part of that smooth era when it was at the height of its popularity. I'm your host, PJ Butta, and in 1995, I was on the radio in Los Angeles at a station called Beat. You might remember it if you're from LA. It was early in my career, and I was just making a name for myself, so it was cool to see my name for the first time in someone's album credits. And that album was Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It, which was also the title of the smash hit that took the world by storm and helped popularize the fusion between hip-hop and R&B in the mid-90s. So this is how we're doing it on today's episode of Smooth Era, featuring Montel Jordan.
What's up? This is Montel Jordan, born in 1968, Los Angeles, California. South Central does it like nobody does.
1968. It was a moment in the civil rights movement where people were activated and getting more vocal about the disparity between neighborhoods in LA. And Montel grew up on 4th Avenue in Slauson in the Crenshaw district of South Central. And during the 1960s, more than a quarter of South LA families lived below the poverty line.
I didn't know we was poor growing up. I just thought we was growing up. There were times we had to grab government cheese from up the block in the cardboard box.
Now, if you're not familiar with LA, where Montel grew up on 4th Avenue in Slauson in South Central, there was a lot of gang activity between the Bloods and the Crips going on, especially in the 80s. I mean, Ice Cube even did a song about that area. How to Survive in South Central.
How to Survive in South Central. A place where busting the gap is fundamental. No.
So how did Montel survive in South Central?
I didn't join any gangs because I had a dad that was at home. And I was more afraid of my dad than I was of being coerced into joining a gang. L.A. is very territorial. You know, I knew I could stay on 4th Avenue and I could go up to Van Ness, but I would never be walking past Van Ness.
Yeah, in L.A. there's certain streets and blocks you don't want to pass. That's why Montel spent most of his time in the South Central area.
Neighbors knew us, we knew our neighbors, and so although there was Compton and Watts and Inglewood, we didn't do any of that. We stayed in South Central, and that kind of became the safe place for me growing up.
And there's no safer place than a church. And the Carver Baptist Church on 51st and Hoover Street was a big part of Montel's early life. It's where he sang gospel, played piano, and worshiped. And being a church musician also gave Montel some immunity from the gang scene, even though Carver Baptist was in the Hoover Crips territory.
That whole area was crazy, but the guys in the neighborhood, their moms and their grandmamas, they all went to the church, and I was one of the musicians at the church. It was almost like the hardest dudes out on the block. They didn't give us no drama, whatever, simply because we was church kids growing up.
And church is where a young Montel would develop his music skills.
You know, if doing the music business is the NBA or the NFL, church was the farm league. That was the place where your musical gift was crafted. Some people may have gone to the Berklee School of Music and stuff like that. I was on the corner of 51st and Hoover and learning to play by ear.
And what did Montel learn to play by ear? Oh, just the piano, sax, and of course, singing.
Growing up, there was a song from Hall & Oates.
Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boy, she'll chew you up.
And in that song, there's a saxophone solo. And it would do this thing. It went... And so I learned how to play that solo from Hall & Oates by listening to it and then playing the part that came afterward.
Montel spent a lot of time learning music, even though you would think he would spend a lot of time playing sports because he was so tall. But he found out, like gangs, sports wasn't his thing.
You know, when you get to high school and you're 6'8", and your name is Jordan and you can't play no ball, like, you got to be able to do something, bro.
And that something was music. And during the mid-80s, Montel was listening to a lot of music from artists that may surprise you.
Listen, young Montel listened to Lionel Richie.
You are the sun.
Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, hey,
Madonna.
I'm ready.
Phil Collins, The Police, Sting, Men at Work, Devo, and Prince was probably one of my favorite artists growing up.
Yeah, I was listening to those same artists too, but I knew early on I couldn't sing or play an instrument, but Montel wasn't aware of his musical talents until one key moment that happened his senior year when he was performing at a high school talent show.
My presentation for the talent show was to sit down and play the piano and to sing the song Jesus is Love by Lionel Richie. And I remember I sat down to the piano and I played that song and sang it. And it was literally the gym went dead silent. People were like in shock that this was coming out of me.
Father, help your children. And don't let them fall by the side of the road.
I was the guy that couldn't play basketball. I was the guy that had the jerry curl. I was not a popular dude, but when I finished that song and I hit those final notes, it was like the silence turned into this eruption. Like I had never heard my peers and their family members like clap and praise what I had done so loudly. And I sat there on the piano and I was like, oh, maybe this is it.
Yeah, the audience was feeling Montel, even with the jerry curl. But when he told his parents he wanted to do music as a career, they weren't so thrilled.
They were not supportive of that at all. You know, it was, oh, this guy, he's going to fall down the wayside like all the others did. Because I understand, at that time, you use your church gift for the church. You know, you don't go and sing the devil's music. God gave you that gift. You're supposed to use it just for God and use it in the church.
So Montel and his God-given talents went off to college. But the college he picked is kind of surprising for a kid from South Central.
I chose Pepperdine University.
That's Pepperdine in Malibu, California. I mean, it's a beautiful campus. It's nestled in the Santa Monica Mountains, overlooking the Pacific Ocean, right down the road from the beach houses of movie stars and celebrities. Still L.A., but not the L.A. Montel's familiar with.
I grew up in a black neighborhood, in a black house, with black parents on a black block. I went to black schools. I went to a black church. You didn't find me over in Beverly Hills or in Santa Monica somewhere. My life was a blackety-black life.
Montel planned to go to an HBCU to learn with other black students, but one of his teachers pointed him in a different direction.
He said, Montel, what have you been told your whole life? And I said, I've been told as a black man in America, if you want to be successful, you got to be twice as good as a white man. And so he said to me, if that's true, why would you go to a school and compete against other black students?
They got a point there. So after thinking about what his teacher said, Montel started searching for colleges that were very white.
And I felt like Pepperdine University was probably one of the whitest colleges in America that was as close to home. Senators' kids and congressmen's kids and driving BMWs and Malibu Barbie and all of that. I said, I'm going to go there and I'm going to compete against those students there.
And Montel did well and thrived at Pepperdine.
I would do the school plays. I would get into a group called the Showcase Singers.
And Montel would meet other black kids and ended up joining a black fraternity, the Kappas. But the Kappa frat house was on another campus that felt closer to home, USC.
So I would leave Malibu, go over to USC's campus, down Figueroa, over there by the Coliseum and everything. You know, that felt familiar to me. And so on that college campus, playing dominoes, playing spades, having drinks and hanging out with these guys, that was the beginnings of the closest thing I would get to an HBCU experience.
But back at Pepperdine, Montel has some pretty popular black college friends who went on to do some pretty impressive things.
Doug Christie, who went on to play in the NBA.
That's right, by Doug Christie.
He was my college roommate. Jomo Hankerson is a fraternity brother.
Jomo's also a music producer and Aaliyah's cousin. And Montel was also friends with Kim Fields.
Mrs. Garrett, this concert means everything to me. Why won't you let me go? Don't you have any feelings?
So Pepperdine wasn't a bad choice, but Montel's musical aspirations faded into the background for a while, and he started heading toward a different career path, law. Yeah, Montel was about to be the next Johnny Cochran.
If it doesn't fit, You must acquit.
But as he was preparing for law school, he asked one of his favorite professors an important question.
I asked him one day, I said, did you ever have any regrets? Like, you this great wife, family out in Malibu, you did a head over all this whole law thing, I'm gonna come under your wing. You know, you have anything you regret? He said he was a pretty good jazz musician. And as great as he is at law, he always maybe kind of wondered what it would have been like if he had pursued his career as a jazz musician. And so when he said that, it brought back to mind my gymnasium talent show moment, that maybe this is what I'm supposed to do moment.
Montel really has some good teachers with good advice, right? Shout out to all the educators listening. So Montel pumped the brakes on his LSAT and was on the path to SING.
And so I put all my chips, plan A, B, and C, all into trying to get that record deal.
And how did he land that record deal? Find out after the break.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back. So at this point in our story, Montel's gearing up for law school, but something inside him said, I need to give this music thing a fair shot. So he moved to North Hollywood and traded his car for a keyboard.
It was an ASR-10, and so I spent my time all summer long learning how to use that keyboard, how to take samples, and how to create drum loops and break beats and all that stuff.
Montel used his new keyboard to start putting together a demo tape and managed to land an in-person meeting with an executive at Motown Records, who invited Montel to audition in his living room. And after the audition, the exec says, that's pretty good, man, but it sounds like something I've already heard.
He told us, he said, you know what you should do, though? Say, gangster rap. Gangster rap is going to be huge one day. And I was like, wow.
I mean, dude wasn't wrong about gangster rap. But at this time, Montel found this suggestion odd.
Like, I'm out of college. He's trying to tell me to go do gangster rap, you know? But what I did take from that conversation was, I can't sound like other people.
And Montel was good at sounding like his musical influences.
So I could imitate Stevie Wonder. I could imitate Luther Vandross. I could imitate Michael Jackson. But I didn't know who Montel Jordan sounded like. So the only way I could create something that didn't sound like Aaron Hall or didn't sound like this person was to try and create a sound that I hadn't heard before. And I did that by sampling blues records. But instead of singing like a normal person would sing over a song, I would write rap lyrics, and then I would sing the rap lyrics over the blues breakbeats.
Montel's song Coming Home off his first album is a good example of the style he's talking about, where he samples B.B. King's song Back in L.A. and sings rap-style lyrics over it.
Damn, it's good to be back home and see the streets where I used to roam. The neighborhood has changed, but somehow it stays the same.
Liquor stores on every other block. I see my homies, so I make a stop. And though I'm tempted, I won't fall back in the game.
Like, I'm using the rapper's sensibilities to create the wording.
So at this point, Montel's working on demo tapes, trying to get his music out to anyone who's willing to listen, including his fraternity brother, John Singleton. Yes, that John Singleton, the director of the classic film Boys in the Hood.
Either they don't know, don't show, or don't care about what's going on in the hood.
Boys in the Hood was about kids growing up in the Bloods versus Crips scene in the Crenshaw district of South Central, where Montel's from. And besides directing movies, John Singleton had a record label, and it seemed like it was destiny for Montel to be signed to John's label. So Montel got connected to Paul Stewart, a producer who was working with John. But Paul worked for other labels too, and he wanted to connect Montel with a certain record exec from the Big Apple.
And he was asking me, hey, if I can get your music, you know, over to Russell Simmons in New York City, can I do that?
That's the Russell Simmons, the founder of Def Jam.
And I'm like, nah, you can't, because I'm rocking with John.
Only problem was, John kept ghosting him.
It would be like, hey, John says he's going to meet with you on Friday at 3:00, okay? And then, you know, Friday morning, and then somebody calls me, and they're like, hey, John's not able to meet on Friday, but we're going to meet you on Monday.
And then Monday would come, and John would be out of town.
And so I probably waited 6 or 7 months trying to get some traction with John. And John was never in the office, and John never could take a meeting. It was the biggest runaround ever. I mean, it was heartbreaking. Ultimately, Paul would still be hitting me, you know, like every couple of weeks. He'd be like, yo, you sure you don't want to give me that demo tape? You sure you don't want to give me that demo tape? I'm like, nah. And then eventually, I gave him a demo tape, and he took the tape. He played it for Russell, and then he hit me like the next day and was like, yo, I'm buying you a plane ticket.
And that plane ticket was to NYC to meet Russell Simmons, who signed huge acts like Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, and LL Cool J. Montel spent a full day with Russell, first meeting at a cafe in Manhattan and then going up to his penthouse to hang.
I'm hanging out in Russell's spot. Russell's like on a treadmill over in the corner, which is hilarious to me. He's not even talking to me. I'm just sitting in this dude's house or whatever. And then Rev Run walks in.
Yes, Rev Run of Run DMC, who is also Russell's brother.
He walks in, he sits down, and he's like, hey, what's up? My brother's been telling me a lot about you. And Russell hollers from across the room, yeah, that's my rap singer. He's going to document street life in South Central. And so Run is like, oh, yeah, so you like a rapper or a singer? I'm like, I'm a singer, but I just kind of have a style where I kind of rap the stuff. I said, oh, okay, that's cool. So I met him, he left. About 15 minutes later, LL Cool J walks in.
LL Cool J.
Just walks into the crib, and then he's like, yo, what's up, B?
And Russell yells from across the room again, that's my rap singer. He's going to document street life in South Central.
So L is like, oh, yeah, that's dope or whatever. So that was kind of my beginnings of meeting his people.
But that wasn't the end of Montel's day with Russell. That night, Montel got to meet Russell's friend Andre and sang for him.
Went to the movies, and now we're sitting in the parking lot of a strip club called Tens in Manhattan. And before we are prepared to roll up into the club, I sing for Andre in the back seat of a Range Rover. Now, understand, I'm singing for Andre, but I don't know who Andre is. I just thought this was one of Russell's friends. You know, Dre, he was calling him Dre. So I sang for Dre. Dre said, I'd sign him.
Later, Montel shares this experience with his girlfriend, Kristen, telling her he nailed an audition with Russell's friend, Dre.
I met some guy named Dre Herrick. He said, you met who? I said, his name is Andre Herrick. He said, Andre Harrell? I was like, yeah, I think it's Andre, Russell's friend. She's like, do you know who Andre Harrell is? I was like, no. She's like, Mary J. Blige. That's 5MC. That's Heavy D. That's Jodeci. Like, he's Uptown Records. And I was like, oh, snap.
Yeah, that Andre Harrell. Rest in peace. And with that cosign, Russell signed Montel. See, selling that car for a keyboard did pay off. Forget law school. Montel was thrilled, even though he was a West Coast artist signing with an East Coast label.
Def Jam was rap from the East Coast, and being from the West, you know, I'm huge on Cube. I'm huge on West Coast hip-hop. But Def Jam was trying to expand its New York reach by bringing West Coast artists, West Coast hood stories on a New York label.
And Montel was ready to tell those stories, or as Russell would say, document street life in South Central. And Montel would do it in a style no one had heard quite yet. We'll break down how he did it after the break.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Once Montel got signed to Def Jam, he moved to an apartment in Burbank and started working on his first album. Now, this is in 1995.
I was trying to get it all in, you know, on this one album. I didn't know if I was going to have another shot.
He pulled together some of his favorite aspects of R&B and hip-hop, thoughtful sampling, catchy breakbeats, and smooth melodies, and blended them with lyrics inspired by gangster rap.
We would sample every little record and every little piece that we could. Because the rappers were doing it, we were like, but I don't know if any singers are like sampling, making breakbeats, and making dope hip-hop type of records and singing over them. So that was our kind of our formula.
And it turns out that formula worked for Montel, especially on one particular hip-hop track he was saving in his pocket.
I always said, if I ever get a chance to sing over Slick Rick's Children's Story, I want to do it. I'm going to sing over that record because that record changes a room. I knew that in order for Def Jam to get the whole vision of the album, that song had to be right. Some people look up at Nas or they look up at Jay. I look to Slick Rick. He was a storyteller to me.
Once upon a time, not long ago, when people wore pajamas and lived life slow, where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to go.
As a nod to Slick Rick's storytelling style, Montel takes us on a journey too. A journey into what a Friday night feels like in his neighborhood.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel alright. The party's here on the west side.
But Montel's take is different from how South Central LA was being portrayed at the time. He paints a playful, fun, and positive picture of South Central instead of a violent one.
It feels so good in my hood tonight. The summertime skirts and the guys in Kanai. All the gangbangers forgot about the drive-by.
But the best thing about the song is that anyone can relate to it.
It doesn't matter who you are. If you're a doctor, this is how we do it. If you're an NBA player, this is how we do it. Everybody has their own way of doing stuff. And that's why it resonated with people. Why the song not just, you know, popped off because of Los Angeles and South Central.
This is how we do it puts Montel on the map. I mean, it's playing on radio stations all over the country, and it hits number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And it would sell over 1 million copies in the U.S. as a single and earn Montel a Grammy nomination for Best R&B Vocal Performance. So now they made it. What was it like for him? What did his parents think of him and his career choice now?
What is the experience of newfound fame? It's a different kind of drug, if I'm honest. You know, my family were in shock because they now got a famous guy. My mom, of course, is like, oh, I always knew my baby was going to do it. And I was like, no, you didn't. You was like, you better go get a job. You talking about you knew I was going to make.
Now, at this point, Montel and his girlfriend, Kristen, were newlyweds. But once Montel got signed to Def Jam, the two of them decided to keep their relationship a secret.
There's this unwritten rule in the music business that if you want to be successful for male artists, guys have to want to be you and girls have to want to be with you. And so being a married guy back in 95 was not the thing that was going to sell records.
Kristen was also Montel's manager, and she was good at it. She hustled to get him opportunities and even gave him money for that trip to New York that got him signed.
For someone like Kristen, who was a female in the business, she didn't want to be the wife. She wanted to be respected for her business ability. So we kept any of our personal relationship out of public eye so that we could give the persona that I'm available, I got a female manager, and you need to respect her for her putting in her work, not because she's my wife.
But keeping up the charade and handling the fame was hard on both of them.
The fame started to become my identity. And so I didn't know who I was other than what people told me. So if the girls that worked at Def Jam, who were responsible for A&R, said, yo, you know, you smile too much, you got to be harder, this is Def Jam, then me, who was a naturally jokey, smiley guy, I stopped smiling.
You can see this version of Montel, the hard Def Jam artist, on his debut album cover. You see his face, it's in a mean mug, no smile, lips pursed, eyebrows raised.
Even though that's not me, but that's who you need me to be, so I'll be what you need me to be.
And that didn't really bother Montel too much because at that point, he just wanted to sell records.
I looked at the music business as I'm Russell's rap singer. He don't need a smiley R&B singer. He needs a Def Jam representative.
And he needed someone who knew about street life in South Central.
I was around it enough to know everything that I was singing about is going to be real. I documented street life in South Central LA according to the truth of what I had seen.
And the truth is, 1995 was an epic year for Montel. He got signed to Def Jam and released a debut album with a hit single. And there was only one thing next to do, and that's to go on tour. And Montel landed a spot on a high-profile tour, the Budweiser Superfest.
First, let's take a quick trip to Chicago to check in with this year's edition of the annual Budweiser Superfest, a hip-hop extravaganza, which this time around stars Boyz II Men, Montel Jordan, Mary J. Blige, Brownstone, and those chart-topping tax paupers, TLC.
One of the hottest tours of that year. That was a tour that should have never happened, but my wife is a beast. And it was super, super dope that she had this vision that we were going to open for Boyz II Men on tour. And Def Jam was like, there's no way that's going to happen.
But Kristen made it happen. So there was Montel opening up for Boyz II Men. But Montel was a new artist. And it was Boyz II Men's show. And they let him know.
They were the pay your dues type of guys. You know, the headliner could mess up your time. The headliner could put you out early. Sometimes our dressing rooms were in bathrooms. Sometimes, you know, we didn't have any accommodations. Like, they put us through it.
And Montel gained more and more stage time as the tour went on. And when he wasn't on stage, he'd go out into the lobby and take photos with fans to make some money.
I would be out there making $20 a pop, taking photos or whatever, because I didn't see money from the label. So any extra bread that I was able to pull in, I was trying to hustle like that.
And while Montel was hustling, Def Jam released a follow-up single to This Is How We Do It called Something for the Honeys. Remember that song? You remember the video? The one with Montel and all the honeys on the golf course? Yeah, that video was pretty epic. But what you may not know is that there were two videos shot. And the one that you've seen was the second version because the first version never came out.
The theme was ghetto golf. We took an entire golf course. We had the baller, Bentley golf carts and all of that. This was before it was cool for black people to even be out on a golf course. We had girls in bikinis laid out all over the greens. We had food catered in, caviar and shrimp cocktails and champagne, you know, back when everybody popping the Moet bottles and all that.
In the original version,
Snoop was there, Warren G was there, Nate Dogg, Method Man, Red Man, Brownstone. The who's who of the music business was all at this video shoot.
The plan was to shoot the music video out on the golf course and then do a party scene at the rec center. But things didn't go as planned.
I'm literally in my trailer getting ready to come out to shoot, and I hear chaos has taken place on the field. And apparently what happened was a bunch of guys that were Def Jam guys and guys from other labels, they're all together. They're all riding in the golf carts.
And as Montel tells it, Gangsta Dreista, BG Knockout, Nate Dogg, and Redman, they're all riding around having some fun until Redman decides to do something he thinks is funny.
And so while he's riding and the guys are following, he slams on the brakes. Somebody hits this guy, somebody hits this guy, and the golf carts all get smashed into each other. think it is Nate Dogg, happens to bump into the car that has BG Knockout and Gangsta Drayster. Now, if you go and look at your hip-hop history, I think they had a song called Dog Pound Killer. Of course, Nate Dogg is part of the DPG.
For those of you who don't know, DPG stands for Dog Pound Gangsters.
So now you've got this situation where they'd have bumped into each other and BG Knockout and Gangsta Drayster start popping off at Nate Dogg. BG Knockout, Cole Cox, Nate Dogg, and like punches him in his face. I was not there to see this. But what I am told is Nate gets hit in his face and he grabs a golf club and Nate literally breaks a golf club across my man's forearm. With that, all hell breaks loose. Dudes just drinking 40 ounces start breaking bottles on the grass, breaking bottles on the concrete. Niggas is going back to the car to pop the trunk. It's literally like South Central LA came all the way out to this very high-end golf club where I'm paying for everything. It becomes like a gang fight and everything gets shut down, my entire video.
So that's why you never saw the first version of that music video. And for the reshoot, they went to a whole different golf course and most of the big names didn't even come back. Except for Method Man and Russell Simmons, they were in it, so you saw them.
But you'll never see Nate. You'll never see Snoop. There was nothing like what it should have been.
Man, that sucks. But the video version of Something for the Honeys they did put out, it was still dope, and it still hits.
The M-O, the N to the E, double L-ing. And yes, I'm guaranteeing that I won't be felling. Some people call me money, some call me money swinger. Sometimes I bust a rhyme, but I'm an R&B singer.
Montel Jordan's blend of catchy R&B melodies and vocals with rap-style lyrics helped him become a standout artist in the 90s. After his debut album, This Is How We Do It, Montel went on to release three more studio albums in the 90s, all of them certified gold. More.
I like the way you walk, the sexy way you talk. Ooh, I can't help myself, baby, I like.
Let's Ride. And Get It On Tonight, which included the song of the same name that hit number one on the hot R&B hip-hop charts.
When I look back over my career, I'm pleased with what I've done and what I've put out. I feel like I evolved. The older I got, the more true to myself I became. Now I got grandchildren that sing, This Is How We Do It.
When your grandkids are singing your song, that's when you know you got a timeless hit. And why do you think that is, Montel?
It had a chorus that's just undeniable. And it's still in television commercials, you know, super, super excited that I got kids in college right now and This Is How We Do It still continues to be mailbox money almost 30 years later.
And still, after all these years, his wife, Kristen, is still by his side and still hustling. The two of them recently published a book about marriage and how to strengthen your relationship with your spouse, and has the perfect title, too. It's called This Is How We Do It, Making Your Marriage a Masterpiece. And Montel's back where he began, in the church, where he serves as the pastor at his and Kristen's Masterpiece Church. And that's how Montel did it and still does it. There was a Stupid Fly production hosted by me, PJ Butta. This episode was written and edited by Chris Olin at Angelino Audio and Mia Sullivan at Places Media. Music by The Math Club, and the mix engineer is Sean Berman. Shout out to Ray David for the dope artwork, and I can't forget the executive producer who loves to snuggle, DJ Cheap Shot. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Smooth Era Podcast. Also, hit the subscribe button, and please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Just to let you know, I like 5 stars. I'll talk to you next time on the next episode of Smooth Era.